Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez.
I'm Clint Ruckus.
And we have a jam-packed show for you. Very exciting to be back in the studio after, you know, our Visual Studio 2010 launch.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Good times.
Yes, yes. Vegas has never been hit so hard. So jumping right into it, lots of announcements. End of last week, Silverlight 4.
Yes, so that came out last Thursday, I believe, the 15th. And then it was announced, or RTM down the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So,
this is Scott Goode's blog, the tools to get. There's an RC update for VS 2010.
Yeah.
And so forth.
And there's lots of cool new features in Silverlight 4. And some of the, we'll have the new player for Channel 9 rolling out at some point shortly in the near future.
So what's it got?
Right now we just added in pinning, full screen pinning.
Ooh,
so
I love
pinning.
So
now for those people with the dual monitors, a.k.a. me.
Me.
You can have it full screen. You'll get a security prompt saying you are aware this will stay full screen even if you click off of it, and it'll stay there. And we also added in right-click copying for embedding along with straight to copy or straight to the clipboard as well. Mm-hmm. So we added in a couple new features from Silverlight 4.
Sweet. And if you want an overview of all the stuff that's in Silverlight 4, our good friend John Papa.
Yes.
Which, you know, we just published a couple of the Channel 9 Live posts with John Papa, and, you know, I loved Ward Bell on there because he had a pimp suit on, and Beth Massey asked him if he would be his pimp, which was gold, baby, gold. So this is an overview of all the new stuff in Silverlight 4. So,
yep.
From the rich text editor to,
trusted application mode.
Out of browser stuff. Right. Yes. So anything that you want to, if you want a quick overview of what's new in Silverlight 4, definitely check this out.
Yeah.
And it's available in Word document format, too.
And now we have the Silverlight Toolkit, which is a conglomerate of source code examples. Has unit testing.
It's kind of like their like dump area for controls, for infrastructure stuff, for
but
everything.
I mean, the WPF has a very similar thing as well. So, but it's a way to get additional controls that don't ship with the actual, like with Visual Studio and whatnot. And gives you additional functionality, such as context menus, for now with the right-click support.
Yes, and Delay was actually one of the guys who developed that was talking about how he wanted to make it as close as possible to WPF. Now, one thing it doesn't have is the ability to have a second level, right? So it's only right-click one level, but it doesn't have second level. That's something they're looking at. So, but the idea is you can have your code almost port between WPF and Silverlight. Other things in here are the Silverlight unit testing, which got a bunch of updates. Check out, there's a session on Mix on unit testing with Silverlight and Windows Phone that I think a lot of people would be interested in as well.
Cool.
And, of course, controls like crazy.
And yet another product RTM'd. This is like RTM month for us.
It kind of is.
SQL Server 2008 R2.
Yes.
RTM, so it gives a bunch of cool new little features, such as streaming for to Atom feeds, I believe. So you can RSS.
So if you're using SQL Server reporting, you can actually have your report data be available as an Atom feed.
Yeah.
There's some new features in SQL Server called Stream Insight. Power Pivot's the other big one that's
I was
in.
Bring that up. Yeah.
Excel and SharePoint. So all that stuff is integrated into SQL Server 2008. So the BI capability is using Power Pivot, which Charles had done a video with the team on how they're able to say scale an Excel spreadsheet that's a million rows long.
Yeah.
Right. So
I've seen some internal emails for a couple projects that will be shown off shortly by the Visit Mix team, where they're.
Yeah, but who knows?
Where Power Pivot was thrown out there.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't keep say them anything.
I'm worried.
Power Pivot, man.
Yeah, exactly.
They're the future.
So cool stuff. And this page is by Roger Doherty, who has a bunch of stuff on the SQL Server 2008 training course, and there's an area for R2 specific learnings. And speaking of which, for Visual Studio, the next big thing is Enterprise Library. So Enterprise Library, for those of you, I mean, it's been around since probably 2003, if I remember correctly. It's a bunch of different components that are supposed to be composable so that you can easily build applications, and they're generic so that they can be used on Windows, web applications, and so forth. So they include things like data access, so you're not rebuilding your data tier, configuration tools, so if you're keeping configuration information, exception handling, logging, and so forth. And there's a bunch of other spin-offs from here as well. And the other interesting point is the dependency injection has kind of become the nouveau thing where I now want to say, hey, use this container versus this other container. Before, you had to use Microsoft's dependency injection, which is Unity. Yeah. Now you can actually use any different kind or different provider. So interesting changes for Enterprise Library, but definitely check this out. There are some breaking changes, I believe, or some things where if you try and use Enterprise Library for different versions of the framework, some gotchas that you need to look at. Okay. So. Cool.
So this is, regrettably, I forgot the individual.
Chris Sells. Yes.
Talked about doing performance implications of iEnumerable versus iQueryable using the Entity framework. I was a bit shocked when we were talking about this beforehand, how if you use iEnumerable with link to SQL or link to Entity, it brings back the entire data set back and then filters on the client. But if you use iQueryable, it does it on the server. Now, depending on what situation it is, that might be better or may not be better. So you have to be very, very cautious.
Yeah, you need to know what the performance implication. And like you, man, I was kind of surprised that it would work that way, because I would have assumed. In fact, Chris goes through his own thinking, like thought process of, hey, what's going on here, and you know when it generates the SQL, what's it actually generating? One of the tools he uses, a tool we've mentioned a lot before, is LinkPad.
Yep.
To see what is this query or expression tree actually gonna convert into a SQL statement, so you can actually see that. For example, in this case, it was all his blog posts were being retrieved, and he was filtering by, say, a category of blog posts. And the SQL was, you know, select star from, you know, posts, if you will. In the iQueryable example, it was actually select star from posts where, like, you know, category name. So you could actually see what was going on behind that. So cool stuff, but definitely something you should know.
So this is Scott Guthrie, talks about auto HTML encoding with the colon. So typically, if you're doing embeds or inline outputting on your web page, you do, you know, percent equal, and then you'd probably just do your model.content.
If you were smart, you should
put server.html encode.
Right.
Doing the colon does that automatically for you now, and it also does some cool things such as avoids double encoding and stuff like that.
Yeah. So simple thing that I didn't really know existed, but so now we have kind of automatic.
Yeah, and this is new in ASP.NET 4.0.
Yeah, and you can use it in MVC or classic.
Yeah.
Or regular, I should say, ASP. When I think classic, I think
normal.
Classic ASP. Yeah.
ASP.NET versus.
Yeah, they need ASP a better Net way to MVC. Distinguish them. Yeah. MVC versus all types of ASP.NET 4. So this is where it gets bloody, dude. So, comment. So folks over at Elegant Code were talking about how removing comments is the road to clarity. This, in my opinion, is not a good idea. So, give you my wife's personal experience.
Okay.
She walked up to a massive code base, and there were no comments in anywhere because the developers didn't believe in comments. And it's really hard to understand the code.
Yeah.
And it's not even so much understanding the what's going on, although that can be really hard, especially when you have things like a func of t that accepts another func of t and a key value, and everything's a generic type.
With no what do they call now? Crap. The IntelliSense commenting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of the challenges is, you know, sometimes comments also give you the why. Because you'll walk up to a method and be like, for what possible reason are they, you know...
Well, it's not just that, it's why...
Adding an ampersand to the end of this string.
Yeah, or I always found it's, I'm doing something that typically would be deemed stupid or incorrect, And then I'm doing it this way because it solves one edge case that has to be corrected.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, I don't think every line has to be commented.
No, I definitely don't. But there are plenty
of changes. But I do think there are areas where you need to comment.
I think the whole
like
remove all comments is just exactly. Regex. There's plenty of code where it's undescribable, or you end up with crazy method names like doesn't work in this version of Windows with this service pack, so therefore I need to append ampersand. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's a great method name, but
yeah.
I know you can add some of the context on why it happened, and I don't know. I'm very anti removing all comments. Don't do it.
Do it.
SparkView.
So this is a engine for ASP.NET MVC or the Castle Project monorail. So what it's a different way of displaying out your HTML and getting your data from your model, or I'm sorry, from your view, from your model into your view.
Yeah, you can replace MVC allows you to replace your view engine.
So the cool thing that I don't think we've actually said is the new version of Channel 9 that we're building out actually uses Spark Engine.
Yeah. So. And the idea being it kind of allows you to do almost like HTML macros, if you will.
Yeah.
So definitely check it out. And, one of the first comments was talking about its lack of IntelliSense support. And it's kind of true. It's like the one thing that a lot of people complain about. So.
Well, we get spoiled.
Total.
Yeah.
Totally spoiled. Kudos, this is video was done by our friend John Gallo, who's actually been on the show. So, another one is Docs for Facebook. So Charles did this interview. Lily Chang and the Fuse team built this application. The idea is, how do we take something, how do we add a social context to documents?
Yeah.
Whether it's, my resume, or whether it's, a This Week on Channel 9 PowerPoint deck, or whatever it happens to be, we can now make your documents social.
Yeah.
And it integrates with SkyDrive, and the idea is you can share easily, comment, all the typical things that you would do in a Facebook experience, add to your wall, et cetera, let people know that you've uploaded a new version. It sucks in that context. And there was a developer event, Facebook F8, which talked about a lot of their new APIs.
Yeah.
And they mentioned Docs as one example and a partner.
I know a lot of my friends are already kind of interested in this because a couple of them are authors, and this is how they could distribute that out to a far larger audience. So they're itching to get on.
Yeah, and it is by invite code only. So, and we have no sway or power or
we're
pull.
Not cool enough.
We're not even in it. So that is wonderful.
C# 4.0 language spec.
Yes. So this is really just the bookmark it link because you're gonna wonder how the hell array covariance works.
Or contravariant.
Or iterators, when you're doing your move next and, the use of the word this in a particular context, you're going to want to jump to the language specification so you don't mess it up. So.
Okay.
Bookmark it.
So Sketchflow in 90 seconds. For those who don't know what Sketchflow is built into Expression Blend, and it's a quick, easy way to build out proof of concept prototype apps that work, and this shows how to do it in 90 seconds. So both we use this to demo our Canon app that we showed off at Mix to Scott Guthrie. So then we had a working prototype that he could see, click buttons, and see what was happening. And both of us really like this 90 second format where it's just like boom boom, what it does now.
Yeah, kudos to Laura and obviously John Harris who did the demos and stuff. But I love this new format. So and there's a lot of people in the comments saying it. So we want to hear from you. What do y'all think about this format?
Yeah,
is this a good thing?
And then if you do like it, which ones do you want us to do? I guess.
Excuse me. Yeah.
For the first couple.
it seems like they're pretty positive, and there's a lot of stuff and really cool features buried in products that you don't discover.
Yeah.
So I like the 90-second format, personally. So
cool.
We're all busy. All right, so
picks of the week.
Picks of the week. So continuing our continuous effort to promote ourselves on to our 20 customers. This is me on .NET Rocks. Carl Franklin and Richard Campbell are doing a tour all across the U.S., hitting various cities. In fact, every event that they go to, they're picking somebody up and taking them to the next location, actually paying for airfare for them to come back.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so this is pretty cool stuff. They have some cool giveaways. They taped .NET Rocks live there, and I got to do flew down to L.A., yep. Which is why you were happy.
Not having to deal with Dan for 2.5 days.
Yes, yes. thank you. definitely check this out, and they're coming to a city local to you. They have cool giveaways, and Carl and Richard are always lots of fun.
Yeah. Cool.
Oh. Cool.
Sweet. Now, my pick of the week is the Coding for Fun Canon. This is the second article, so this was actually me talking about the hardware and how it was built. So the picture that we were showing here is we have, you know, the servo,
the wiring board,
yeah. This... which
What's
I just realized.
BGC?
I just realized I have to redo that image now. Yeah, I know. Fail on my part. A BEC is a battery eliminating component. So it's basically we're running all the electronics at 24 volt, mm-hmm. but we're using off the shelf components. So we have to step it down to voltages that won't blow up the devices.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm pretty sure you get angry with me if I went through a router, a $100 part every time we turned it on.
Hey, and off switches. So hilarious insight into that one.
I did show that in the article. I did show that. And I
did see the burnt.
Yeah.
Part,
there,
yeah.
I accidentally had a small electrical fire that blew up some parts.
Well, what was funny was I think that was on either a Friday or a Saturday. And
it happened on a Friday
like,
night.
Friday
at like
night.
3 a.m. in the office.
And you started IMing me. And I was on writing code for the same project. So it shows how little lives we have.
As you're like, go home. but yeah, and I do make sure. By the way,
if you ever get an IM from, you know, a colleague saying, hey, by the way, yeah, there was a little fire at the office. It's a little scary.
But I do clearly state that this is running at voltages that are dangerous. Use a voltmeter. Watch what you're doing. Don't do this at 3 a.m. where you've worked for 16 hours.
Yes.
That was my fault. It was literally, I swapped two wires and bad things happened. But yeah, it was a fun project.
Yes, and we'll actually be doing a session on, breakout session at TechEd on it, so.
More self-promotion.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's in June.
Yes.
So, good times.
That was our show, this week on Channel 9, and thank you all.
Thanks.